You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The Glass Menagerie is Tennessee Williams' most autobiographical play. The Roundabout has brought a new, strikingly innovative production of it to the Laura Pels Theater at the Harold and Miriam Steinberg Center for Theater on West 46th Street, where it's scheduled to run through June 13th. And joining me now are two-time Tony Award winner Judith Ivey, who plays Amanda Wingfield. I'm very pleased to welcome you back to our show. And also with us is director Gordon Edelstein. Hello.
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 Gordon, this production was first produced at Long Wharf Theater in New Haven, where you're the artistic director. Did you change it in the transfer to Broadway?
Well, the space is so different at the Laura Pels Theater. It's a proscenium, and Long Wharf is a thrust theater. Now, that may be seem an arcane difference for an audience member, but
not actually, for the actors.
But for the actors and for the director, it's a completely different experience. And when you have a chance to do a play more than once, it always gets deeper.
So to some degree, it's a matter of thinking 3D as opposed to 2D?
In a thrust theater, one person's foreground is another one's background. And in a proscenium, everybody's looking at the same thing at once.
What about the cast?
Cast was, we changed one cast member. Josh Charles, who played the gentleman caller up at Long Wharf, is on a hit TV series and couldn't join us. But we were so fortunate to have the wonderful Michael Mosley as the gentleman caller. He is terrific.
The production brings out some of the humor in the play. Was it there all along, or did you do things to highlight that?
Well, you know, you never do anything consciously to highlight it. You just cast great actors like Judy and Patch Darrah, and they just try to tell the truth as best they can, and sometimes the truth is funny.
Well, I've heard that Tennessee Williams sometimes would annoy directors by laughing inappropriately at rehearsals.
The famous
lines that he thought were funny.
Absolutely. Famously, at the end of Streetcar, I've always depended on the kindness of strangers, which is sad and ironic and horrifying line. He would apparently cackle and scream with laughter at the back of the house every night, and they had to make him leave the theater. Judy is a particularly wonderful at finding both the truth and the humor in everything.
Well, so. Judith, some actresses have played Amanda as a monster. Others have seen her as a victim. You don't see her in either of those ways.
No,
maybe
I don't.
Both and a lot more.
Well, I think she does things monstrously, and I think at times she feels that she has been victimized, but I don't think that's exactly who she is. I think that she's a mother who is desperate to protect her children and loves them deeply. And as many of us mothers, we might not do it perfectly, express it perfectly when we're trying to, help our children.
Well, she's victimized partly because the father of these children ran off many
yes.
years ago and left her in pretty dire straits.
Yes.
And she's tried to hold things together the best she could. Somebody who saw herself as a woman of real potential. She had all of these male suitors when she was younger,
She's
beauty.
The classic Southern belle who thought she would marry high up and live on a plantation and have all this support. And here she is in a tenement in St. Louis with two grown children who still live with her.
Now, we mentioned earlier that there is a funny side to this. Is it all in the script? Because I don't think of the Glass Menagerie as getting as many laughs as it gets in this production.
I think it's in the script. I grew up in Texas and have been in the South many times in my life. So I've been around Southern women, and I think that they are hilarious without trying to be. And so finding her truth many times is very funny.
Well, and then you do also, sometimes she's trying to be funny, sometimes she isn't. I think you must have about 15 different smiles throughout a performance, which is kind of, there are smiles that are sincere, there are smiles that are really amused, and then there are smiles that that are masks. It's an amazing performance.
Well, thank you.
And Judy also, in her interactions with each of the other three actors, the way she flirts, the way she teases, it is with such humor and warmth always, and it just teases almost every possible laugh out of the play.
Why does Tom feel so suffocated by his mother?
Well, they're living in a small apartment, and Tom is a grown man. He's a young man, and everybody has to leave home. Everybody who is listening, virtually everybody who's listening to this broadcast right now, has left home. Everybody has to individuate. And Tom is a writer. He doesn't have a place to write. Tom is also a homosexual, young homosexual man, and there isn't much place for that in the Wingfield home, let alone St. Louis.
Tom is Tennessee Williams' real first name.
That's correct.
But the play doesn't ever mention homosexuality.
It doesn't.
He's just a single man.
He's a single man who goes out at night to the movies and comes home late. But what of course we know is that when the play takes place in the 1930s, there was a gay subculture in St. Louis, as there was in so many cities around the country. And this production supposes that when Tom is going out to the movies at all for all hours, he may be going to the movies sometimes, but he also may be going to gay clubs.
And is that something that you put into the play?
I mean, because I haven't changed
obviously
the
it's
word.
Not in the script. Yeah, but you can play a character in a lot of different ways. He can just be a kind of repressed guy.
That's right. Well, no, it was a conscious choice of myself and Patch, who plays Tom. We didn't want to play him swishy or overtly homosexual in a kind of vulgar and attractive way. But Tom seems to me to be clearly the authorial stand-in, and then he's a gay man. And when he comes back one night very drunk, the production supposes that he's had perhaps his first homosexual experience. And the next morning when he has a conversation with his mother, the production also supposes that he almost comes out to his mother. He says, "There are things in my heart, mother, that I can't express to you." What are those things? Mm-hmm. And I imagine that they are Tom's desire to tell his mother that he's gay. And he can't, and he didn't have the words.
You think it's interesting that this has not been done in other productions, even though we know Tennessee Williams was gay, and we know that this is autobiographical.
I've heard of productions that have tried to take that on. I've never seen one. It's always seemed patently obvious to me whenever I've seen productions of the play that, come on, man, we know you're not going to the movies. We know what you're doing, and there's nothing to be ashamed of. Come on out and say it.
He called it a memory play. Is that something that you kept in mind when you were putting this together?
Yeah, very much so. And we try to turn it on its ear a little bit in this production. This production imagines that the play takes place in the hotel where Tennessee Williams began to write the play.
In New Orleans instead of St. Louis, as most productions would.
Exactly. Tom Wingfield comes on stage and begins to write The Glass Menagerie. And instead of the play starting in the Wingfield household, the play starts in Tom's imagination in a hotel room where he's writing the play. And Amanda and Laura emerge and come onto the stage.
So is it always in your head in the hotel in St. Louis with them as figments of his imagination or the characters he's writing? Or are we suddenly in St. Louis at a certain point?
Well, kind of like the mind itself. Sometimes when you imagine you're going, if you think about something hard enough and long enough, you actually go there. I hope the audience forgets that you're in the hotel room when the scenes begin to play out, and then you're reminded again that, oh no, we weren't really back there. We were always in Tom's imagination.
Well, in most productions, he's coming home as a merchant seaman. Did you have to change the script to change it this way where he's
didn't change
he's
a
typing?
Word. Didn't change one word. Changed, added one word, Tom. Kira Keeley, who plays Laura so beautifully in this production, screams Tom as he leaves. I hope Tennessee Williams will forgive me.
Judith, did the more autobiographical aspect of this production affect the way you approached the role? Did you research anything about his brother?
Oh, absolutely. I read a couple of books about Tennessee, and then his own mother wrote a book with another woman. It was kind of an answer that to what seemed to be an indictment of her when The Glass Menagerie was first produced and successful. And she wanted to defend herself a little bit. And so I read that book and her stories, etc.
Well, like so many plays, you can interpret this, as we said earlier, you can interpret Amanda as a monster or as a rather sympathetic character. Mm-hmm. And I would guess that Tennessee Williams would have come to her defense when people read her as a monster.
He did. He did many times. And, you know, he loved her dearly. He gave her the royalties.
Oh, he gave her the best lines in this play.
And he gave her the best lines. So,
yeah.
I think she was an inspiration to him. I think she he thought she was hilarious and he loved her. He knew that she didn't do things perfectly and that she was a force to be reckoned with. But she never abandoned them. And she was there for them and took care of them and saw to their welfare through the years till they were grown-ups. I think that this play really was written to indict himself in many ways because he felt guilty that he abandoned his sister.
My guests are Judith Ivey, who plays Amanda Wingfield in this new production of Glass Menagerie that's directed by Gordon Edelstein. It's at the Laura Pels Theater at the Harold and Miriam Steinberg Center for Theater at 111 West 46th Street and running through the 13th. You've said, Judith, that you wanted to play Amanda Wingfield since you were 18 years old.
Yes.
What drew you to her? I mean, is it just that it's a great part?
What wouldn't draw you to her? She's everything. Someone asked me the other night, are you exhausted after you do this? And I said, well, I am, but I'm exhilarated because I've gotten to do everything. I've been funny. I've been tragic. I've cried. I've tried to control somebody. I've thrown things. I've screamed at the top of my lungs. I've wept. I mean, you know, I haven't done a tap dance. That's about it.
You come close. You move your legs. You move your feet a
well,
lot.
Well, I dance.
She dances
yes.
a lot in the play.
Yeah. I know.
Judy's her own choreographer.
I think she's a dancer. So.
And didn't Gordon worry that you might think you were a little young to play the part?
Oh.
I was afraid.
When he offered it, he said, please tell her I know she's too young for this part. And I said, that's why I'm saying yes.
Well, you know, when I it's a play that I've been thinking about for years. I've loved it since I was a teenager. And I'm sort of waiting for the right moment to do it.
See, and, since you were 18.
That's exactly right.
It's
that's
providential.
Exactly right.
We did
providential.
This together.
Is it partly because the words are just so beautiful? Isn't that hard to play sometimes?
It's really, you know what? It's the story that breaks my heart. Mm-hmm. It's the unbelievable truth and beauty in which Williams renders this heartbreaking tale, which is a mythic tale. Again, it's a story about leaving home, and it's a story of survivor guilt. I mean, when we leave home, we leave something behind, and in Tennessee Tom's case, he left behind a mother, and in Tennessee Williams' real case, his sister Rose was seriously disturbed and was lobotomized shortly after he left home. And
first
in some
institutionalized,
ways,
then lobotomized.
Correct.
And in the play, he does a terrible thing. He betrays them in a way that I don't want to reveal everything, although I'm sure most of the listeners are familiar with the Glass Menagerie. But he betrays them, despite the fact that he's so protective to his sister. By not paying, oh, I'll say it, by not paying the electric bill and spending the money on himself, that's kind of rough, leaving your mother and your sister without any electricity and no money to pay for it.
And maybe for Tennessee Williams, that was a metaphor for how soiled he felt upon how guilty he felt about leaving home. And I'm sure he was filled with tremendous guilt after his sister was institutionalized and lobotomized. And in the play, Tom knows that when he leaves home, which he must do to become himself, he is leaving his mother and sister to the elements.
He wrote a lot of vulnerable women, obviously influenced by his sister Blanche DuBois in another way. But then later, there are women who are institutionalized in some of the later plays.
Yeah.
So I guess this was one of the most powerful things from his past that he had to deal with again and again.
Yeah, you know, we, in some ways we do, don't we? We are our early hurts we play over and over and over again to forgive ourselves.
What about the language? It's quite beautiful on the page. Is it difficult to make it into something natural?
No. As I said, growing up in the South, that language is very much a part of that culture and the floweriness of it, which, of course, is the poetry of it, is how a lot of people talked, particularly at that time. I use my own grandmother a lot in this, particularly just the voice quality. But she was a woman who only went to ninth grade. And yet you would never know that meeting her, because she read and she educated herself, and she valued language. She married a man who was a minister who knew Greek and Latin and was highly educated, and he spoke the same way, even though they weren't from the Carolinas. It was just part of the culture. So if you know the culture, it comes natural.
And, you know, Judy's ear for the language, making it seem so natural, taught us all, really. Judy's got this extraordinary ear with the language, and everybody learned in some ways how to speak Tennessee Williams through Judy.
I have to say, when I've seen productions of other Tennessee Williams plays, not just The Glass Menagerie, but including The Glass Menagerie, I think many times you can tell that that whoever is at the helm or the leading actors are not Southern, simply because they comment on the language rather than embrace it. And that sets us away from it. Then we do not emotionally go into it.
How much did Tennessee Williams clue you in on all of this? He wrote several pages of production notes about the music and the lighting, which I would think is rather unusual.
Well, it is. Tennessee did it a lot. Eugene O'Neill did it also a lot. It was much more common in the early part of the 20th century than the middle years. But he, of course, Tennessee Williams also says in his voluminous production notes that theater will change and that productions should and ought to change with it, thereby giving, I believe, directors permission to, while honoring his script, find a new way to tell the story, which is
so
what we
took
to
some
do.
Liberties.
We tried to. You know,
he took direction.
I was taking direction from Tennessee. We were just trying to tell the story in a way. Everyone's seen this play, or not everybody, but so many people have seen this play so many times. I didn't know that the world needed yet another straight-up-the-middle production of Glass Menagerie, and it just seemed like if to try to figure out a way to tell this great story in a different way.
But there's always a problem when you do that, and we see it with different approaches to Shakespeare, where some critic is always going to complain that having Shakespeare play done in modern dress or set in Stalinist Soviet Union or Hitler's Germany undermines the whole thing. And it was interesting to look at the reviews to this play, because the Times, a number of other critics just adored it, and then others objected to the fact that you didn't do it the way they're used to having it being done.
There are always purists who feel that that's what you're only supposed to do it that way. I mean, clearly, those are people who didn't read what Tennessee wrote, how you can change it up. I think it's always – I remember when I did Follies at the Roundabout almost 10 years ago, there were people who were Sondheim fanatics, and they met me at the stage door and said, listen, I just have to tell you, you're doing this all wrong. And you must go to the director and tell him. It's just, you know, it's offensive. And I was not really, and still am not really, of the musical world, but that was my education to how serious people are about, you know, how Sondheim is done, or how Follies is done, and in this case, how The Glass Menagerie.
You know, well, Sondheim is alive. He could have come to you and said, Judy, I think that you're making a mistake. I'm sure he didn't do that.
He didn't.
Everybody was very pleased with that production.
You know, one of the critics who took us most to task, John Lahr, is writing his own biography right now of Tennessee Williams. And I understand. I have a lot of respect for him. And I have a tremendous amount of respect for him. But he felt, I think he feels like Tennessee Williams perhaps is his province, and it must be done the way it must be done.
But we see that we've been having dueling critics a lot. The Times made a big point about the fact that two of their critics had a very different take on Twyla Tharp's new show.
Absolutely.
One loved it, one hated it. Ben Brantley just loved this production. To some degree, Tennessee Williams gives you license in his opening notes. He wrote, because of its considerably delicate or tenuous material, atmospheric touches and subtleties of direction play a particularly important part. Expression and all other unconventional techniques in drama have only one valid aim, and that is a closer approach to truth. He's saying
Exactly.
Don't be realistic here.
And, you know, and the proof of the pudding is in the eating, as Bertolt Brecht said. So that the real truth is the director, are the performers, are the designers honorably, deeply trying to confront the material and present it in a way that is fresh, or are they just showing off?
And I have to brag on Gordon. There are so many people who come to see this who say, I feel like I've never seen this play before, and I have. I heard lines I've never heard. It's been reinvented, and I think that that's what Gordon has done, is framed it up in a way that here in our 21st century, people relate to it because it is a universal story.
And it's important to say, since we're flattering each other, Judy, no matter how much they came after me, everybody loved you.
Now, Judy, you have directed some plays yourself.
Yeah.
So you've thought a lot about this. What happens when you're working with a director? Well, not in this case, but another case where you think the director does have the wrong notion.
Well, I signed on as an actor. I didn't sign on as a director.
And so, you're able to separate the two?
I think so.
Oh, Judy.
I think so.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
I certainly have discussed things with Gordon, but if he said, I don't agree, I'm doing it this way, then he has the last word.
Except Judy's always right. So
Now, the production has received 6 Lucille Lortel nominations, including Best Director, Best Actress. So I have both of you in this room. Why is it only on a limited run? Do you have to vacate the theater?
The Roundabout is a subscriber-driven theater, and they have, 30, 40,000 subscribers, and that fills up the theater to a large extent, and they sell a whole bunch of single tickets. The truth is the Glass Menagerie is a play that's been on Broadway, I count, 4 times in the last 20 years. So it's not like it's a play that people haven't seen before, and I guess, well, the Roundabout actually has asked us to extend past June 13th, but I'm not sure that the actors' schedules will allow that. That's a conversation.
No,
that's
I would think we.
Right.
Well, I think it was decided
because
one actor lives in L.A. and one actor is a mother
and has to spend time with her son. We're also going to the Mark Taper Forum in September in Los Angeles. This production is going.
So we still have a whole nother journey to.
We're waiting for an invitation from St. Bart's over the Christmas vacation. The St. Bart's
or the West End.
Well, good luck to you on both of those. But meanwhile, we have this opportunity to see this new production of The Glass Menagerie at the Laura Pell Theater on West 46th Street. That's off of 6th Avenue through June 13th with this stellar cast, Judith Ivey, also Patch Dara, Kira Keeley, and Michael Mosley. And it's been a great pleasure talking to the two of you today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And
thank
good luck
you.
With the awards.
Thank you.
I'm sure you'll get a few.
That would be nice.
It would. Judy.